ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्री भगवान
उवाच
एवमेतरहं
हृष्टा
प्रश्नं प्रश्नमिदं
वरा
प्रश्नं प्रश्नमिदं
वरा
युयुसुनाविनाशने
युयुसुनाविनाशने
सपत्ने अर्जुनेन वै सपत्ने अर्जुनेन वै श्री भगवान उवाच The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Evam, thus, etat, this, aham, I, prista, was asked, prashnam, the question or topic, prashnavidham, of those who know how to inquire, vara,
you who are the best,
you youth suna,
by him who desires to fight,
vinashani,
in the battle of Kurukshetra,
sapatnai,
with his rivals or enemies,
arjunena,
by Arjuna,
vai,
indeed.
Translation by the humble servants of Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O best of those who know how to inquire, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna, desiring to fight with his rivals, asked me the same question that you are now posing. And we can repeat responsively. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O best of those who know how to inquire,
on the battlefield of Kurukshetra,
Arjuna desiring to fight with his rivals,
ask me the same question that you are now posing.
Purport. Lord Krishna was pleased that his two friends Arjuna and Uddhava had posed the same question regarding the opulences of the Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna considered it wonderful that his two dear friends had asked exactly the same question.
Om Ajnana Chimarandasya Ajnana Ajnana Svapayana Chakshwamayatamena Sivitamena Bhutale Sri Jaitanya Manovistam Stavitamena Bhutale Swayam Bhagavadana Antarati Svapranatikam Vancha kalpa tribhyascha kripa sindhubhyeva cha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadita Vishnumati Bhaktivedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Sarasati Devi Gaur Rani Pracharani Nimisha Sashina Vaid Vasti Jagastani Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pustabhu Tuleya Shri Mati Deva Mita Swami Tinami Hare Krishna
So Text 6 Chapter 16 Canto 11 Please forgive me, I didn't really prepare much because I just got a phone call to sit here and try and share with you something. Banu Maharaj is not here and Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj has left and Jamananda Maharaj came around 1 a.m. so you're stuck with me. Please forgive me. I'll try my best. So here the Lord is still explaining to Uddhava this Uddhava Gita section about his opulences. So from his inferior potencies, to his superior potencies, Lord Krishna is explaining how by yoga practice one can actually come to meditate and understand who he is. And of course, the Lord giving the supremacy to the process of devotional service to Bhakti Yoga has in previous verses in detail explained the mystic yoga perfections and as to the processes, what you achieve by meditating on the certain elements. So here it's a very short purport, but it's very packed actually if you look at it. So here in the translation, the Lord is impressed by the inquiry of Uddhava, because this is the same question that his dear friend Arjuna had asked on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So basically for us, you know, there isn't anything really that we that the Lord has not heard from the living entities. Like, we pose the same questions over and over again. So these elevated souls, they're posing the same question because the subject matter, of course, is very difficult to understand how the Lord manifests himself in the material world and at the same time remaining aloof. So this is a topic that can be easily misunderstood, especially by the impersonalists or the voidists or different schools of thought that pop up and have explanations of Krishna being or having a body that's made of matter like that. So it's very vital that we understand that Uddhava here is addressed by Krishna as one who knows how to inquire. So there can be inquiry, as Bhagavad Gita 4:34 explains, the process of actually gaining knowledge through the medium of a spiritual master, Tadvidi Pranipatena. So one has to know how to inquire properly. So we can inquire in not such a humble way. We can inquire in a way that is packed with envy. We can inquire in a way that is packed with pride or jealousy or all these different qualities that manifest due to our being tinged with the modes of nature. So here one has to actually know how to inquire properly. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, after Arjuna poses his arguments as to why he doesn't want to fight, Krishna, of course, hadn't spoken anything as yet, because Arjuna keeps on going on and giving all these different arguments and explaining himself and why he thinks out of religion, out of morality, he's acting in that way. Krishna remains silent, because one thing that you learn from the Bhagavad Gita and in all scriptures is that unless you present yourself in a humble manner, then you can't actually receive knowledge. Because then directly you're saying, well, I know, so I'm not going to ask you anything. I have the knowledge, I'm not going to surrender. But we see after Arjuna had said, okay, now I'm completely exhausted, I've exhausted my intelligence and my questions, now I'm a soul surrendered unto you, please instruct me. And only then does Krishna start speaking in the Bhagavad Gita, because there was that first step in getting to learn, that first step of admitting that we don't know anything. And of course, Arjuna is not like... Arjuna is not conditioned. He's not a conditioned soul. Arjuna is playing the part of a living entity and how that living entity is supposed to approach the Lord or the Lord's representative as a manner of inquiring about the absolute truth. So in the previous verse, Uddhava was asking the Lord to explain his potencies, how he manifests the earth, the hellish planets, all everything in creation basically. And as Banu Maharaj had been explaining the past few days, how Krishna has different potencies, different shaktis that actually are responsible for creating the material universe, and that he doesn't necessarily have to come and do the entire creation. But of course, Krishna is the ultimate fact. In the immediate fact, you can understand that Lord Brahma is given the duty and the potency to create, but ultimately the impetus is coming from Krishna. So we can have all the elements, but unless the Lord, of course, as explained, unless the Lord glances over the material energy, nothing can work, nothing can happen. So Lord Krishna's impact or Lord Krishna's influence in the material world is actually very pivotal, because without his glance, nothing is activated. So everything would just remain morbid and inactive. So Krishna is Krishna is that is the X factor, as people like to put it. Krishna is that X factor. Without Krishna, nothing can happen, even in the material world. So one may ask, how is it possible that Krishna manifests himself in hell, in the hellish planets, or what people conceive to be hell in the deepest dark regions? But in the matter of creation, we understand how Krishna, expanding himself, his many expansions from Mahavishnu to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu to Kishoradakshaya Vishnu, by expanding the material universe, and by entering into the different atoms in all the universes, the Lord himself remains present in there. And then from onwards, from there, everything else starts expanding. So the Lord himself, he is present everywhere, but he is not touched by the modes of material nature. So just as we see different devatas themselves, they become overseers, or they become controllers of certain modes or certain elements of material nature, but sometimes they kind of get tainted or a little bit covered or bewildered by those modes. And the classic example, of course, is Lord Shiva being slightly bewildered by Mohini Murti incarnation. But that's a very special case at the same time, because Mohini Murti is Vishnu himself. So it's not like he got bewildered by some normal woman who came dressed up and stole the nectar. So only Lord Vishnu could bewilder Lord Shiva because of his exalted position. But in every respect, we understand that Krishna is able to manifest himself in different ways, but he is not touched by the modes. Just as, you know, we can see the sun manifests itself in the material world, but the sun can't get contaminated. The sun only purifies. So the sun can go into dingy areas or areas where there's a lot of filth, but we can't see any contamination from the sun. The potency of the sun is that it purifies everything that gets into contact with it. And then one may also ask themselves, well, if the Atma, if the soul is pure and is spiritual, then how can the soul become covered by the modes of material nature? Or if Krishna is, you know, is the supreme Brahman, then how is it that when he comes to the material world, he, in his original form, he doesn't get contaminated? But of course, Krishna is different from the jiva in the sense that he can never, he's not marginal like we are. We can choose either to become covered or not. So Krishna, or the living entity, firstly, Srila Prabhupada often gives the example of how the living entity, he gives the analogy of rain, that in its pure state, when the drops of rain are falling from the sky, they're pure, they're uncontaminated. But the minute, you know, the rainwater hits the ground, hits the earth, it becomes muddy. So water is pure, but then it comes into contact with matter, it becomes contaminated. So it's not that the water is contaminated, it just meets a substance that covers it. So in a muddy substance, we can't really see, all we see is the mud. We can't see. So with ourselves as well, because we become covered by the false ego, the ahankar, we become covered by that principle, we can't really see our real self because we're all mixed up with the modes of material nature. So we get a body that is designed by the modes of material nature, and that continues to cover us as we continue to try and enjoy the modes. So we try and exploit the modes of material nature, and the modes keep on covering our existence. So you can try and experiment for yourself if you're at home. You can take your mirror and then you can put maybe 30 or 50 centimeters of dust or sand and just see if you can see yourself. So oftentimes, you know, in the Shikshastakam, the translation that, you know, we cleanse the mirror of the heart. So the mirror of the heart, the region of the soul, is contaminated. And by the practice of devotional service, we get to wipe that dust off, that gunk off. So if you can imagine how thick, you know, sand is on any item that you put it takes a while for you to actually clean it off. So that's the principle, that one actually needs to perform in order to get out of this ahankar principle, to get out of attachment to the body and the expansion of the body, attachment to family, nation, society, and so on. So the translation actually for opulence is from the Sanskrit dictionary. It means exceptionally opulent. Exceptionally? Yeah, vibhuti is described as exceptional opulence. So with our materialistic mind or with our concocted mind, we can't really understand the true opulence of the Supreme Lord, because for us, you know, we're used with our senses to analyze different aspects of creation. We use our senses to analyze ourselves, our senses which are contaminated. So to actually try and understand the Lord in full, to understand how Krishna is in the heart and that Krishna is also everywhere, but at the same time Krishna is not affected by the most material nature. So that becomes a difficult task for the mind to actually try and grab a hold of, to try and understand. Even Lord Brahma in the Srimad Bhagavatam explained that even the yogis, you know, who's been practicing Ashtanga Yoga for different lifetimes or for millions and billions of years, they cannot actually understand the Lord. Understand that Krishna is only, can only be approached by the process of devotional service. And that's just the fact. That's just the reality of it. So in the Bhagavad Gita, and the tenth chapter, of course, is entitled Opulence of the Absolute. So in the 16th verse, Arjuna asks Krishna to please explain your opulences. And Krishna starts off by explaining how he's present in the different elements and how he's present in the empowered personalities as well. That, of course, in all our activities, whatever we do, we're all dependent on the Lord. Even if we're creators of the universe, even if we're controlling the wind, if we're controlling the sun, if we're controlling whichever elements, we're actually under the shelter of Krishna. So in the immediate fact, we can say that, you know, if you're outside and someone asks you, who's responsible for creating your shade? Is it your body or is it the sun? So it's both, but ultimately it's the sun, because if the sun wasn't there, there'd be no opportunity for the body to be reflected on the ground. So we have that that mercy of the Lord actually giving us strength or the intelligence to carry out our duties, but we should never forget that actually everything comes from Him. So He can withdraw at any point, and we can see in the different lives, in the different scriptures, in the different biographies of sages, once they actually forget that everything they're getting is from the Lord, then the Lord very easily extracts Himself from that situation. Even in our lives as devotees, Krishna can bless us in so many ways, but when we get contaminated, when we start thinking, now, you know, I've done this by my own whims, or it is because of my intelligence and my doing, Krishna very easily rectifies. I once heard in the Back to Godhead magazine, there was one Mataji, and she was telling her story about, she was very, in the material sphere, she was very qualified, she had her PhDs, and she had all these things, so she kind of had a critical mentality to certain devotees because they weren't educated, and they couldn't type as fast as she could, or they couldn't use the latest version of whatever, Outlook, or whatever you call it. And then she said her realization, there's one moment where she just completely forgot how to do everything. Like she had no idea of how to down, like she completely went blank, because she had such pride that, you know, I'm so great and I've done this with my life and I'm using it for Krishna, everyone else, you know, good on them, but I'm much better. And then Krishna just took it away. And she says that was the most embarrassing situation in her life, because then she realized, I'm nothing in comparison to Krishna. Krishna can just take it away at any minute. And then she started serving the devotees more. She started really understanding that only Krishna is the Ishvara. We're not the controllers, we're not the creators of anything. Krishna uses us as instruments. If we study the Srimad Bhagavatam and, you know, we read second and third canto and we actually understand who Krishna is, just even in terms of the creator, how powerful Krishna is. And then we get to understand how powerful, you know, the modes of material nature, how powerful Maya and illusion is, that Maya makes us think that we can surpass that person. That we become such fools that we think, you know, so Krishna can bewilder Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva drinks poison. I can't even drink, you know, alcohol, but I'm more powerful than Lord Shiva and I'm more powerful than Krishna. So basically that's what we're saying when you're trying to enjoy this material world. And then Krishna says, okay, let's see how you go. And then Krishna rectifies us. And if we're intelligent enough, we quickly get back, we work ourselves into shape. But if we still have an intense envy towards Krishna, then Krishna, because Krishna reciprocates with our desires, if we still want pratistha, if we still want, you know, opulence, if we still want name and fame, all these things, Krishna will provide that. But at the same time, we'll forget about Krishna. So when we understand even just Krishna's opulence in terms of creation, how he's just glancing over material nature, everything gets activated, everything is just, you know, it's like when you go and watch a drama or whatever in the theater, all of a sudden lights, action, everything happens. Krishna is that light. He gives light to everything. He gives life to everything. So we understand that process. We understand how it's easy for Krishna to expand himself and manifest himself into every universe, into every atom, into every heart of every living entity, and guide them from within. And that Krishna is responsible for all the elements that we have, how he is the fragrance of the earth, how Krishna is the taste in water, how Krishna is basically behind everything that is material and that is spiritual. And if we truly read and understand with a sincere heart, then we can jump off this platform of thinking, I can also be the Ishvara, I can also be God. So without understanding these explanations of Krishna, then we become lost in creation. That is why it's important, not only that we read Krishna book and, you know, it's nice stories and we put certain sections of Srimad Bhagavatam and forget about the first canto because it's too bewildering, or forget about the description, you know, the fifth canto with the different jambudvip and this and that. You know, we need to hear these things so that we really get to understand what we're dealing with and how insignificant we are in terms of creation. We're tiny sparks of Krishna. But out of Krishna's mercy, Krishna thinks that we are so significant that Krishna creates an entire material. He creates innumerable universes so that we can come and try and do our thing and at the same time get rectified. So for us, our mood, we understand that we're insignificant servants of the Lord. But Krishna's magnanimity, Krishna's blessings and Krishna's mercy, he sees us as very significant. He creates the material universe for us. Krishna puts the holy dhams. Krishna comes and performs his pastimes. Krishna comes and sends his representatives. He comes himself, he sends his representatives. Because he thinks that, because Krishna is sincere in his heart, these are my parts and parcels, how can I leave them be? So no matter what, you know, the parents can understand, no matter what your child does, you can never neglect them. Even if your child is a serial killer, and you can see the mother saying, he's still my lovely boy, or he does abominable things, or whatever, you can't neglect your child. And similarly, Krishna is our father, so Krishna can't just cast us into this deep dark well without giving us little tidbits here and there about how to get back to him. So it's not that, oh, all is lost in creation, oh, we're so fallen, we're so sinful, we're never going to climb out of this hole, out of this pit. But Krishna has elaborately explained to us, be aware of the material nature. This is my energy, and it can bewilder the marginal potency. So certain sections of scripture of Bhagavatam, they start explaining all these different aspects. But it's not that we should just read them and, yeah, moving on, flip the page, and then this is that, that is this. We really have to get purified by that knowledge, because that's the only way we can actually understand Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord and Controller. Otherwise, it's just easy for us to really just be flicking the pages and not reading and understanding and not digesting Krishna's supremacy. So what to speak of explaining Krishna's material opulences, or explaining how Krishna, you know, controls the different activities of the material world? What about Krishna in the spiritual world? What Krishna does in the spiritual world? And how he conducts himself and the types of relationships he has? So for someone who has no concept of bhakti, these opulences are difficult to understand. For someone who's not actually understanding, you know, Krishna, as we chant Jai Radha Madhava, Krishna is the love of the gopis. And on one side, Krishna maintains, destroys, and creates the universes. Krishna has his Virat Rupa form. So that there's always those different aspects of understanding Krishna. In full, also we understand that, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and his eternal form and his eternal abode, Goloka Vrindavan, that's the highest realm that we can get access to. So Krishna is there, he is that personality. As we've seen Lord Brahma getting bewildered in the pastime of him stealing the cowherd bulls and the calves, just because he saw the Lord as a cowherd boy with a flute and his friends. How can one understand, without developing bhakti, no one can understand that sweetness of the Supreme Lord. That yes, he is creating everything, he has his opulences, we have the nature and the earth, all these powerful things, all these grand things about the nature. But at the same time, he's just simply a cowherd boy. And he reciprocates in the different rasas with the devotees. So by the process of bhakti, only one can understand these opulences much better as opposed to any other process. Because as you desire to know Krishna, Krishna at the same time, because he's in the heart, Krishna also reciprocates. It's not that Krishna is in the heart just hanging out and sitting down and doing his different yoga mudras. Krishna, he's not lazy. He's not like sadaisical, he's just not hanging around and say, so what's on tonight, and where are you taking me today? Are we going to the temple, or are we going to enjoy? What's up? What's happening? Krishna is just not hanging out in the heart. Krishna is constantly churning our heart in a way that will get us running back to his lotus feet. But we have to understand that actually Krishna is active. It's not that Krishna is just there doing nothing. We have to know that, you know, Krishna is active. And if we dovetail our desires towards his lotus feet, you know, he'll become even more active in a positive way. But the other time I was explaining how under Krishna's lotus feet you have certain markings like the thunderbolt and the elephant goat, and you have the barley corn. You have these different markings which are given in the 25th chapter of the 10th canto. After the pastime of the gopis searching for Krishna, Srila Prabhupada explains, you know, the importance of taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord is that we get the marks on the Krishna's feet. Of course, they signify and they show these opulences of Krishna, these potencies Krishna has. You know, Krishna destroying the enemies of the mind, and at the same time, Krishna increasing the greed for the devotees to want to get to know him. Krishna protecting the devotees' endeavors, protecting their association, all these different activities. This is what happens when one actually goes for the lotus feet of the Lord, when one actually tries to get to know Krishna. All these different aspects gradually get given to the devotee. The six enemies of the mind get cut off. Our greed, our want to know the Lord increases. And similarly with Krishna's birth, if at all we want Krishna to manifest himself in our heart, because here it's Bhagavatam sometimes speaks in such a way that, you know, you can explain the verse in, I don't know, so many different ways. So here, the Lord is explaining how he manifests himself in different ways. So the Lord can manifest Himself in our material body. The Lord manifests Himself within the heart. But the heart has to be in a specific condition for us to directly hear and accept His message. So just as in the pastime of the Lord appearing in the heart of, in the mind of Vasudeva, in the heart of Devaki, that happened after certain children had been born and had been killed. So these different children, of course, they explained that the mind of, they were explained as the sons of Marichi. And Marichi, of course, he is an incarnation of the mind. So these six sons that were killed, they are showing us, in order for the Lord, in order for Balaram first to come into our heart, in order for the Lord Krishna to come into our heart, we have to kill these six enemies of the mind. And that is why Devaki, we can see that the first six children, they were taken off. It's not that Devaki was so fallen that she had to, you know, have her children killed. It's to show us, if we want the Lord to manifest Himself, we have to get rid of these enemies of the mind. And these enemies of the mind, the sons of Marichi, came as Devaki's children. So the Lord has to appear in the heart, but for that, the heart has to be in a certain condition. It can't be filthy. It can't still have lust, envy, pride, madness and illusion. It can't have those qualities. So by inquiring about how to actually get rid of those qualities, if we don't know about them to start off with, we won't even attempt to clean the heart. So if we don't know, if we're on battle, because you know the material world is compared to different things, into a dark well or a forest fire, you know, so many different analogies are explaining the material world. But sometimes, you know, this world is it feels like you're on a battlefield. You're just fighting all the time. And they, you know, people say it's survival of the fittest, but no one is fit because everyone has to die. Everyone is going to die, but they just don't get it. So we're trying to, you know, be as long as we can in this world, but we can't. Because the material body is going to die. So we're on a battlefield, and any intelligent, you know, commander or chief knows that when you're on battle, you have to know what you're against. You have to know what your enemy lines are like. You have to know how many kings he has on his side so that he's going to strike. You have to know, where can he be hiding? How do I fend myself here? How do I do this there? So we're in the material world. Danger at every step. How do we protect ourselves? Not just from an external point of view, but how do we protect our consciousness? How do we protect our heart? How do we protect, you know, the soul from being lost? So by taking full shelter and performing this activity of inquiring from a learner, to inquiring from one who comes in a bona fide disciplic succession, if we inquire from them, then we can start actually equipping ourselves for battle and coming out of this war with material nature. So we have to shield ourselves, we have to understand our existence, how we came to come to this place, why we're here, and we have to accept it. We're envious of Krishna. We wanted to enjoy separately. We wanted to have our own Ras Leelas, which are not working out in the material world because no one is ever satisfied. So we wanted to have these things that only Krishna can possess in full, and we're frustrated because we can't get them in full. So you can try and, you know, if you really, if anyone ever says, you know, they're God, if anyone says, I'm God, I'm the avatar, we can just tell them, okay, so distribute your love freely to everyone. Just distribute yourself and just remain equipoised and just go with people where they live. And even if they live in the squatter camps or they live in a tin shack, just reside with them and just love them. Just distribute your love profusely. How many people do that? People in this world are so conditioned to, you have to have, you know, a nice car and then I'll come with you. Or you have to have good looks and then I'll be seen in public with you. So the Lord is so magnanimous in His aspect that He's giving Himself He's already given himself because he accompanies us when we take on a material body. So this is his magnanimity, that the Lord, he's giving himself, whether you're in hell, whether you're in the material world, or whether you're in the spiritual world, he's giving himself. So it's a very wonderful way of understanding Krishna once you actually get into Krishna's opulences, that he's so kind and he's so generous that by his opulences we get engaged in his service. We get to be the sub-creator. We get to be the controller of the wind. For Krishna, we're doing it for Krishna. We get to get in contact with his devotees and dress the deity or do so many things, but that is all for Krishna. And in the spiritual world, you get to be Krishna's mother. So you have Krishna's tattva, you know, and then we have the ras. So a tattva, of course, Krishna is the Supreme Father. But he has his rasa, he has his relationships where you can be Krishna's father, you can be Krishna's mother, Krishna's lover, Krishna's friend. And that begins, you know, when you start off being someone's friend, you know, then you start getting intimate with them and then the relationships keep growing. And this is hinted here that Krishna starts revealing himself on the platform of a friend. So unless we're friends with someone, how can we go into the, you know, the deepest chambers of our heart and start telling them about ourselves? So if I go up to the street waiting by a tram and then someone starts speaking to me and telling me, you know, I'm this, I'm that, da 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 da, I'll think, I don't know you, and it's strange that you're telling me all these things. Or I just walk up to a random person and I start speaking about my glorious self, they'll think I've completely gone nuts. No, but Krishna, because one has to be a friend of Krishna first, and then Krishna gives himself. Sometimes, you know, that friendship manifests its way in a very interesting manner as envy or anger. And Krishna is still kind of tickled by it. He thinks it's funny, so he reciprocates with Shishupal and all these different demons. Because he knows, you know, they're his parts and parcels, and it's just a little, the relationship is a bit fringed like that. But because of this opulence of it, because of this, his dynamic, his exceptional opulence, Krishna reciprocates and is always merciful. Whether he kills you or whether he sends you to the spiritual world, it's always merciful interactions. So by learning how to inquire sincerely, just as Uddhava is inquiring here, and just as Arjuna has inquired in the Bhagavad Gita, then Krishna gets impressed and Krishna keeps on giving us the impetus to gradually dive deeper into understanding who he is. And the deeper you go, the more you start developing this love for Krishna. And then it automatically becomes spontaneous. It's not only on the platform of Aishwarya or just understanding the Lord, you know, in his supreme majestic form, but you break through those barriers and you do that by the process of devotional service. And not only does that happen, that simultaneously we get rid of the qualities that come about as due to our association with matter, with the modes of material nature. So all our attachment to the body, to everything related to the body, gets diminished and we start taking shelter of Krishna. So we can meditate on that. We shouldn't become unenthused, or, you know, our jaw shouldn't drop when we open Bhagavatam and we find a chapter of 75 verses explaining Krishna's opulences or the time factor and think it's not for my ears. It is for our ears. We have to get purified. So we hear, the heart gets purified. So I'll stop there. Hare Krishna. Does anyone have any comment, or is Christina?
Yep.
how if he's the bird sitting, where's the activity in that? So of course, the explanation that Krishna is active in the heart doesn't mean that. Well, basically, what happens for anything, even for activities to manifest, for us to get the environment to have the opportunity to be able to express ourselves, all these are situations that are created by Krishna. So Krishna puts certain people in our environment. Krishna sanctions demigods to give us a specific body. Krishna sanctions, you know, the different controllers to put up in a specific situation in the universe because of our activities. So that's Krishna's activity. That's how Krishna is active. And Krishna in the heart, you know, because he's in the heart of everyone else, so Krishna directs them and pulls them in different directions so that they can, you know, they can have certain interactions in life. So the example from the Upanishads that there's the soul, individual soul in the heart, and then there's the Paramatma also in the heart, and the Paramatma is waiting for us to actually turn and look at him. So Krishna is creating situations in our life, whether it's karmic situations, whatever situation, it's because of Krishna that these things are happening, and he does that in order for us to actually turn and look at him. So Krishna is active, he's creating activities for us to become in distressed. He creates opportunities for us to become completely bewildered, either bewildered, enamored by the material nature, or completely disgusted by the material nature, and then that's when we turn to him. So he's very active, he's creating all these situations, although sometimes it looks like tough love, it's a bit hard, but we get so many things happening to us, but that's Krishna's way of saying, just look at me and surrender unto me. So they usually say, you know, we take one step towards Krishna and Krishna takes 10 towards us. So just that one little slight, Krishna help me, Krishna is already giving himself even more. Does that help? Yeah, because we have, as a marginal potency, you have that free will either to listen or not to listen. So in the fifth canto, there's the pastime of Kim Puranjana, I'm not sure if the fifth canto, there's a verse that explains that the living entity is either helped directly or indirectly by the super soul. So indirectly, the spiritual master comes. So that's how Krishna is reciprocating with us in the heart. And at a certain point in your spiritual practice, if you're qualified enough, then you take directions from the super soul in the heart. This is when you're on a completely different level. So Krishna is active. He's either in the heart, and depending on our qualification, we can either take instruction directly, or Krishna will send through different mediums, whether it's through other people who are not devotees, whether it's through devotees, different things. Krishna arranges situations like that. Hare Krishna. Okay, it's 8:30, class ends at 8:30. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki.